Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyond Ananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power and we shine a light ahead of us on the path where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right front and center to face the music and dance together, to address problems rather than merely defend positions. We have another purpose as well, and that is to provide a context at a time when the content can be contradictory, confusing, and overwhelming. Well, in these times of great crisis and, of course, great opportunity, there's an idea that's kind of gotten a hold of me that I call the Eisenhower moment. Nearly 60 years ago, President Dwight Eisenhower said, quote, "I think that people want peace so much that one of these days governments had better get out of the way and let them have it," unquote. And as more and more of us are coming to understand, the word peace means more than just the absence of war, although that would be a great start. Peace means the end of domination one over the other. It means fundamentally adopting and applying the golden rule. And more apparently than ever before, it means living in harmony with the natural world. You know, as the crises, and we're talking about ecological, economic, political, social, psychological, spiritual, they seem all to be rising at one time. Maybe we're in that moment where a critical mass of the heretofore uncritical masses can speak in one coherent voice and say, we want this. This is the Eisenhower moment. Now, certainly we have the means to communicate ideas and memes and plans and programs instantly across the globe. And nearly two-thirds of the humans on the planet, 4.5 billion people, have a cell phone or personal device. That means that humanity can be mobilized around an idea or an issue almost instantaneously. So would that make a difference? Well, maybe it's the only thing that will. Our guest this week, Andrew Gaines, an Australian visionary, activist, and systems thinker, has dedicated his life to bringing about such a movement of movements. He is a co-leader in the Great Transition Initiative, a citizen-led educational movement to inspire mainstream commitment to transitioning to a life-affirming culture. He has a rich background that has made him a systems thinker. He's been a Feldenkrais practitioner, a psychotherapist, and creativity trainer. He's a former naval officer with a degree in philosophy. He's trained in improvisational acting, Aikido, Tai Chi, and something called the natural step, a way of working out whether a business or a country is ecologically sustainable. He's written books, including Kitchen Table Conversations, The Witness, Gateway to Self-Development, and Creative Conversations. Well, we're looking forward to a creative conversation today. Welcome, Andrew.
Hello, Steve.
Good. And, you know, through the magic of modern technology, you're joining us all the way from Australia. And I have to say, I've been wanting to visit Australia for many years. But first, I have to overcome my fear of walking upside down. So once I do that, I'll see you down under. So it's good to have you, my friend. I always like to begin with three questions when hearing about a big idea like the Great Transition Initiative. Why this? Why now? And why you? Why are you the person to bring this forth? So just jump right in.
Okay, let's start with the why now. The quick wrap is, as probably people hearing this would know, humanity is in an existential emergency. There's a group now becoming famous in London called Extinction Rebellion. And the people who look to the future based on reality data, scientists and such, and they have a grim prognosis. Many people think it's unlikely that civilization will survive the end of the century, and maybe our whole species will do ourselves in through the obvious stuff of global warming and at least eight other existential threats, including the possibility of nuclear war. I got into this. Let's go back. What are the three questions again, Steve?
How's that?
The three questions.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Why this? Why the Great Transition Initiative? Why now? And why you? And you were just about to jump in and talk a bit about your experience.
Thanks. So I did a workshop with a wonderful teacher, Jean Houston. And one of the exercises she gave, I became committed to the well-being of coming generations. It's a strongly felt sense. And it shifted from being a pessimistic idealist who knew all the troubles of the world to being a committed optimist. Not because I'm optimistic, the prognosis is grim, but because I choose to act as though what I and other cohorts do, that together we can actually change the direction of our whole culture. And that's the task. For a long time, I didn't know what to do with it. But I heard about something called the natural step and trained in it. It's a way of working out whether, as you said, a business or a country is ecologically sustainable or not. Somebody introduced the term to me, corporate social responsibility. Well, that sounds interesting. Before I find out what other people mean by it, I should think it through for myself. I concluded that it should mean corporations taking responsibility for making, as Bucky Fuller puts it, a world that works, given our excess environmental trends. I did not find that. Now, as a Feldenkrais practitioner, I'm a systems thinker. Somebody comes to me and says, Andrew, I've got pain in my left knee. I don't try to fix the left knee. I inquire, what are they doing with their shoulders, their hips, their ankles? It stresses the left knee, but not the right. And then they intervene to change how the whole body works to improve its coordination so the stress goes off the knee and the symptoms disappear. So I'm doing a systems analysis. It's a way of thinking that's often done by skilled architects, built into business plans. You get the lay of the land. You understand how things work kind of as a system, and then you decide where your leverage points are. So when I thought about it, when I asked, for example, what makes global warming worse, pretty topical thing, by asking that question, it's easier to identify the main drivers and map them out on one page. It's all the things that increase the amount of stuff that we produce and use and throw away. So we're looking at advertising. Advertising makes more stuff, which means there's more work for the factories, which means there's more demand for energy, which means there's much more CO2 in the atmosphere. We can add in great trade agreements. That feeds the wealthy elites, it's designed to, and it's driven by the mantra, economic growth. Which leads to a startling conclusion to some people. The continuation of economic growth, because it loops through to making more CO2 emissions, continuation of economic growth will destroy us. So we need to transition to a some kind of a steady state economy, as it's called, that lives within planetary boundaries. So Feldenkrais, systems thinking, psychotherapy, doing the natural step. I did a lot of things that put me mentally in a position to connect a lot of dots and develop a model of what we now call whole system change, but does not have to not only the model, but a way of communicating that. So that's the start answer, Steve.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's really interesting that you used working on the individual through the Feldenkrais to project that onto our society and look at what are the things that make global warming happen. And then, of course, the next questions are the leverage points. Where can we actually begin to put the brakes on? And again, I'm big on reframing. And when we think about growth, we think about more things, more manufacturing, more production. But perhaps we need to think about growth in other terms, in terms of happiness, in terms of cooperation, in terms of people being safer in their lives and being more creative. So if we're taking something away, if we're saying that, okay, we need to live with less stuff, how do we begin to impact the system to produce less stuff and more of the goodies that we really require on a deeper level?
Let me respond to two levels, Steve. One is a friendly challenge. When you say, oh, we can have growth, what you're unconsciously doing is buying into the mantra of growth. You just want to mm-hmm. reframe it. Mm-hmm. You just forget about growth. Get on with living well.
mm-hmm.
But the That's earlier right. question was, where's the leverage point? So many people have identified quite a large number of practical leverage points, let's call them. So there's people big on solar energy. Here in Australia, we're trying to stop a massive new coal mine. People work on, let's get refined corporate finance in the U.S. so that corporations can't unduly manipulate the political process through money. Those are all very important leverage points. But there's one that's even more important, and that's the way people think. The best article about that is by Danella Meadows, who did a famous spontaneous she jumped up to a blackboard once and gave a talk on places to intervene in a system. So fairly low on the totem pole is rules and regulations. High on the totem pole is the frameworks of understanding people use to make decisions from.
Mm.
I've taken that to heart. If we're to change the culture, we need to change all the drivers that make things worse. I've just gone through them. Economics, consumer psychology, industrial design, stuff like that. But to change those things, especially the big picture ones, we need to have massive public will. And not just, oh, let's change things, but thoughtful public will. People need to understand what needs to change, why it needs to change. Extinction Rebellion is a big meme in that direction. And see a way that they can contribute to the change.
Hmm.
I might say a bit more about that. If we ask, what are the core principles of a life-affirming culture? Didn't talk about that, did I?
Not yet. And by the way, I really appreciate your reframe of growth as living well. So you can live well at any different level, and it doesn't necessarily require, particularly planned obsolescence. So let's look at the markers of a life-affirming culture.
Okay, the two operating principles. Now, most of us, not all of us, think in terms of principles, but I learned it from engineering at Princeton. And what you do with a principle, you have a principle and you find applications. So one principle of a life-affirming culture is that it will be ecologically sustainable in the real-world sense of not destroying our life support system, not destroying nature. The other principle is very close to the evolution uprising, which is we will operate on what Rhianne Eisler called partnership respect values rather than domination control values. And I think that hopefully the language is obvious, but domination control is empires, wars, patriarchy in the worst sense, all that stuff. And partnership respect is taking care of your family, not through power, but through caring for their well-being, taking care of the community, right up to the founding ethos of the United Nations, which was meant to be a community of nations. So, if we understand those two principles, not very hard, we can begin to embody them wherever we happen to be. If we're in a business, we can change our manufacturing processes to reduce or eliminate environmental damage.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're in a business, we can change the internal culture from often one of bullying or stressful command and control to something that, by ethos and intent, cares for staff people's well-being, brings out the best in people, catalyzes their good ideas to make the business thrive. So those are the two principles, and they can be applied wherever we happen to be.
Very, very interesting. And again, I've seen your graph that you put together, a little map, a little pyramidal map, that really shows how simple this idea is, that really those are really the two factors that are important. We have to, and very interestingly, we'll pick this up when we get back from our short break. We'll go a little bit deeper into what the great initiative is and how we can get there from here. This is Steve Behrman. I'm talking with Andrew Gaines on WikiPolitiki.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
Hi, this is recording artist and composer Yuval Ron, inviting you to a voyage through the chakras, a new double album of guided meditations to transform your life, a sublime musical medicine for nourishing inner peace and reaching to your higher virtues. Get it now at metamindfulnessmusic.com, M-E-T-T-A, mindfulnessmusic.com.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket, a tent, a sandbag, a doctor, Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
In the wake of a hurricane, your monetary donation can make a huge difference to those in need. To donate, visit supporthurricanerelief.org. That's supporthurricanerelief.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Well, we're back with our guest, Andrew Gaines, on WikiPolitiki. We're talking about the Great Transition Initiative, and we're talking about transitioning to a sustainable, life-affirming partnership culture. You're very articulate about the two qualities that would make a difference, something that is in harmony and with the web of life and sustains our environment and planet, and also something that takes our energy and uses it to partner with one another rather than spending a lot of energy fighting in a very non-productive, destructive, wasteful, and unnecessary way. So yes, many people are already awakened to the crises that we face. How is your approach different and better? How is it more likely, you think, to make an impact?
What's important about the Great Transition Initiative is it addresses an unaddressed problem for the entire progressive environmental and faith communities that care about environmental and social well-being. That unaddressed problem is, how can we engage the unengaged? How can we engage people who don't listen to WikiPolitiki talks, don't come to the lectures, don't read the books or great videos that are out there, who may be a bit concerned or maybe not, but have no way to act on their concern if they do have it? And my answer is that the entire environmental progressive faith communities, we have an unexpected or unrealized resource for affecting public consciousness. That resource is ourselves. It seems to me that most of the members of the groups sign petitions, maybe go and protest to get it more active, or they pay dues to some of the big organizations that do the important policy research and stuff like that. What we could do in addition to that is step up and become citizen educators. Now, the potential for this is that each of us has our own personal network, as well as our larger Facebook networks or whatever, as well as some interface with the public, perhaps, if we have businesses. So our combined networks of the literally millions of groups around the world that care in this space is massive, but we can't see it. But it's there. It's massive. So the idea behind the Great Transition Initiative is to inspire as many of these groups and their members as possible to step up to leadership and become citizen educators, and to make it as easy as possible, we provide a set of ready-to-use tools. They include emails people can tweak. That's pretty easy to do, send out emails. We have guerrilla marketing tactics. And we have a special tool for one-to-one conversations called kitchen table conversations. And what's interesting about that is they use physical markers to help people keep track of a fairly complex conversation about whole system change, as we call it, the way I outlined it earlier. I got the idea of using physical markers from a former stage magician who said, people like to have physical things to hang ideas on. So we lay out the markers indicating factories and stuff and advertising and trade agreements. And we can see how they link up together and discuss it and move things around and debate a little bit if we want. And through that, people develop a mental map of how things work. And from that mental map, we're then positioned mentally and emotionally to support large-scale transformative leadership when it emerges. And also to exert such leadership at our own more local scales. So will this work? Don't know. It'll work if we can take it to scale, and we're beginning to talk to some large organizations about that. The one here in Australia happens to be called GetUp. Our proposal will go to the GetUp board in December.
It sounds like it goes very good with Move On. Get up and move on. And sounds very you got to get
cousins.
Up before you move.
They're cousins.
They're very cousins.
Yeah, and it would go with Move On and with Havas and lots of smaller groups too. And even it's not just about groups. Anyone listening to this can already go to the Great Transition Initiative website.
And I have a link on my Wiki Politiki page, by the way, so you can find it on the today's show's page. You can find it that way.
Pick up the tools and just begin to use them. So there it is.
And what's great about this, there's two things. First of all, as you said earlier, you're using an unrealized resource, which is ourselves. And particularly when people feel powerless in the face of these massive things going on, that's one thing. The other thing that I think is most different from most approaches that I've seen is the metamap idea, that most things that I've seen tend to poke around at the edges of issues. They tend to focus on the symptoms, ultimately, rather than addressing the fundamental issues. And so when you look at the entire map of how all of these things are related, our buying patterns, where we work, the priorities our government has, et cetera, and so forth. What the tax system is subsidizing. Then we get a bigger picture of some of the leverage points. So it is rare that people get to think comprehensively like this. Have you seen how does this work? I mean, how do we actually move people not only to become a citizen educator, but to see how this really is a whole system issue and how the whole system can be leveraged from many different points? Say more about that.
Okay. If we use the language whole system change, few people have a clue what that means.
Right.
And the reason they wouldn't have a clue is simply because they never thought at that scale. No blame. So there's no simple language to communicate whole system change except perhaps whole system change.
Yeah.
Okay, but for people to get it then, my thought is, okay, then we need to create circumstances where people can be supported and encouraged to sit down and think it through. The best way to do that is through a conversation. Mm-hmm. So our model is to get, it's a dream at this point, not a lot of traction yet, but the dream is to get thousands, hundreds of thousands of people conducting this conversation. When? Well, we could do it right away, but it helps to have a kind of a goal or a target. So I and my cohorts on the Great Transition Initiative team are thinking about having a Great Transition splash maybe June, July, August next year. We're not sure of the timing yet, but it needs enough lead time that we can organize many people to do this kind of all at once. And the splash has a couple of levels. Just talked about, we'll do some online trainings to conduct kitchen table conversations. But people who are thought leaders, who write, for example, what they could do is publish articles at that time or give talks. But just begin to use the meme, a life-affirming culture. Perhaps see if I should tell about how I came to that meme. So talk about that?
Yeah, please.
Okay. People have said, there are all these groups, they should collaborate. They should cross-fertilize ideas, get to know each other, become more effective. But so far as I can tell, most of the attempts to get leaders of such groups together have been contentious. and for a reason that is quite understandable. Each leader thinks that their approach and what their group is working on is important. And each leader is correct. What they're working on is important. So my thought was we need some kind of a meta goal that can unify everybody. And the language I came across, somebody suggested it to me when I was talking about it, comes from Joanna Macy, the eco-philosopher. She had the phrase, a life-affirming culture. So I picked that up, put it into my own frame, and it comes out to this. The task of our time is to transition to a life-affirming culture rather than continuing on our present course of ecological self-destruction. So we have a positive goal combined with a sense of existential emergency. Marketers know the value of having your brand or your meme seen everywhere. The dominant meme for a global civilization is economic growth. I'm suggesting that this meme or one like it, a life-affirming culture, is a counter meme to economic growth. So the idea is to get everybody, as many as we can, all using this meme simultaneously during the Great Transition Splash, so that people see it coming from, quote, everywhere. And even though at first they won't know what it means, the process of explaining that and unpacking it can begin.
I really like that idea. And, of course, you know, using an idea developed by Joanna Macy, she also developed the idea, the Great Turning, which is very similar to Great Transition. What you're doing is you're taking a phrase that anybody can march under that banner, and nobody has to lose their brand or has to lose their organization. And if people simply agree to use that language and really to simply say we are transitioning from a growth-based, resource-depleting economy, culture, to a life-affirming, sustainable resource culture. I think that really there doesn't even need to be an organization. People can simply start using the language, and the language can transcend many organizations. That sounds like what you're saying.
That's an important point. All of it's an important point, but the notion that it doesn't require being part of an organization. So the Great Transition Initiative is not an organization in the usual sense. There's no central group that directs what people do. The idea is once we see the need to get the culture behind the idea of a life-affirming becoming, evolving to a life-affirming mode of living, and that communication is essential to that, helping people think this through for themselves, then we can just get on and do it wherever we happen to be.
Now, it seems like there are two obstacles, and we're going to be addressing this, I'm sure, in the last third of our program, but I'm going to introduce them now. And one of the obstacles is obviously the momentum of things as they are. We have momentous momentum. And just about everybody who is quote-unquote successful inside the system, that is influential in some way, these people are bought into things as they are. A great example of that, and you know, one of the reasons why Al Gore has been excoriated is that, you know, here he is pitching using less resources, and he's globetrotting around the world and spending all kinds of resources, living in a huge place, and somehow there's not a recognition of that disconnect. Okay, that's part one. Part two is the general, we would call it inertia, sense of disempowerment, preoccupation with the ordinary details and stresses and challenges of life, for most people to become active in this. So we have, first of all, the obstacle of the institutions resisting, and then we have you know, the masses of people going, I can't make a difference. How do you address these?
Well, slowly, one by one. No, it's paradoxical. Yeah. Ultimately, it comes down to one-to-one conversations. I might say to somebody, Jim, would you be willing to sit down with me, have coffee for an hour, hour and a half, and look at some of this, look at these models I'm talking about, whatever. So you make an invitation. Mm-hmm. So that's the one-by-one. But to scale it, again, we talked about getting groups like Move On or Avast asking their members to be citizen educators. People need to really get that we're, as a species, we're really doing ourselves in as a globalized civilization. Mm-hmm. So one of our tools is called Looming Disasters. It's a set of images that if you look at that, say, oh, yeah, yeah, I recognize that. I recognize ocean acidification. I recognize species loss. it's meant to be a conversation just to bring the darkness home. Now some people will turn off from that, and some people will say, let's fight for our survival. Let's fight for our well-being. And that's one reason why I admire the Extinction Rebellion folks, because they're really raising that prospect to public profile.
Right, exactly. And, I mean, in a certain regard, you can use the anger and outrage and all of this intense reactivity emotion to get things started, but ultimately to sustain it, it requires moving towards something more positive. As the Swami would say, you know, outventing is fine, we need some inventing. So we'll talk a little bit more with Andrew Gaines when we get back about the inventions that he's come up with to help us move to a life-affirming civilization. Steve Behrman, this is Wiki Politiki.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network, presenting transformative programs and events to help you waken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
Hi, this is New Age Grammy winner Paul Avgerinos. Thanks for listening to Om Times Radio, and please support my peaceful healing music with a purchase at iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you shop for fine music. Just put my name into the search engine, Paul Avgerinos, A, V like Victor, G like George, E-R-I-N-O-S. You can also visit me at roundskymusic.com. Thanks for listening, and I'm wishing you the brightest of blessings.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Okay, Steve Behrman here. We're back with Andrew Gaines. We're talking about transitioning, the great transition to a life-affirming culture from a consumer extracting society. So I like the idea. I like the idea of, first of all, giving people the opportunity to really have a close look and be with the situation. You know, I've read some things recently talking about the environmental crisis and the stages of grieving and so on. And what happens is people don't really want to look at the most painful aspects of this, and they want to skip over that. And yet I think it's important as we make a change, there's a phase that involves really looking at what we've created, not with a sense of blame or anything like that, but with a sense of this is what our evolutionary capabilities have brought us until now. This is where we're coming from, and now we're looking for something different. How do you deal with that big issue of allowing people to, as you say, bring the darkness home, allowing people to really get the depth of the tragedy and what we're on the threshold of before acting in a positive way?
Steve, to be honest, I haven't come across that. Now, maybe in my own development, I just skipped all those phases because I was a pessimistic idealist, and then suddenly became a committed optimist.
Yeah.
So I know that Joanna Macy runs despair and empowerment workshops, really gives people space to plug into their grief at the destruction and their anger and all of that. I've done that, but that's not my particular forte. But I'd like to come up with a different theme. Can I, for a moment?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so we talked about one of the important principles, key principles of a life-affirming culture is partnership respect. Now, that principle takes place in the context of a Western civilization that has been a murderous domination control system since the Kurgans invaded Turkey or since the first city-states in the Middle East. We've had wave after wave of empires and war, and at a whole different level, generation after generation of child-abused children. We kind of go together. So we've had a population for millennia now, several thousand years, that has been largely in a state of post-traumatic stress disorder, war and child abuse. That's the bad news. The good news is that through mysterious reasons, unknown, child rearing is getting better. People are becoming more sane. We have some parents who raise their kids in very healthy ways. That means without beating them or abusing them, but actually supporting the kids in developing what they organically are going to become internally. So our current situation is that we're in a dominant system. Lots of people are still quite mentally disturbed, some in serious ways, and some are mentally disturbed, but in familiar minor ways. Anxieties, self-doubts, all that stuff. So one of my phrases is, we must become the kind of people that can create and enjoy a life-affirming culture. With that goes the idea that, okay, we can do a lot of inner work. There's plenty of stuff around to do that, and it's going on now. All the good stuff is already going on. But in addition, you can help other people get onto the journey. And I wrote a book on the psychological side of that. It's called The Witness, Gateway to Self-Development. And I'll just give the key idea of that, and then, Steve, if you're willing, I'll play a game with you.
Cool. Okay, good.
Okay, so the key idea of the witness is the witness is that part of ourselves that can see exactly what we do without judgment. And it's right next door to the critic, which sees the same thing and sometimes gives us holy hell for it. Another name for the witness is the observer self.
Mm-hmm.
By simply introducing somebody to that concept, it may make a difference, make it a little bit of separation from their internal critic. Oh, that voice in my head, that's the critic. I can label it now. And I'm not quite so caught up in it. And if people can then go on and observe all sorts of things that we do, good stuff and bad stuff, mentally and in action, we're then in a position to make the changes to become happier and healthier. But if we can't observe, then we're just stuck in repetitive patterns. So to introduce somebody to the witness is a gift. Mm-hmm. And by the witness, I don't mean the book. I mean that specific idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, I got an idea. People could go door to door as witnesses. Hi, I'm a witness for witnessing, and here I'm going to teach you right here how to become a witness so that you create a degree of separation from whatever it is that you're totally emotionally enmeshed in, right?
Steve, I've done that. I'm a fan of emotional freedom techniques, EFT, the tapping technique.
Yeah.
And I've been known to introduce that to strangers on the train that came up in a conversation and actually resolve something for them because it's quite teachable and friendly. Okay, so introducing people to something like the witness or the other exercises is what I call a workshop on the fly. We don't have to organize big workshops. That's great if we do. But you can just be a teacher informally with somebody you know in a casual moment. So The Witness is one book. Creative Conversations is the other. And in that, I have a set of games and exercises that if we play the games, we develop new neurological skills. It's kind of based on Feldenkrais thinking. One of the great games is called Rich Associations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the best way I know of to teach somebody spontaneous lateral thinking. So what's a rich association? If we ask for associations, for example, to the word cup, people might say teaspoon, saucer, sugar, tea, all that stuff. But a rich association is a mental jump to something similar, but a jump, like to the cup Socrates drank hemlock from, or the Holy Grail, or a Scots joke about selling thimbles as whiskey glasses for your guests, something very small. So when I introduce that, I say, let's play a game. You give me a stimulus word. I will try to come up with two rich associations, and then we turn it around. Shall we play?
Okay, good. Okay, how about book?
Yes. It's okay to take a little time to think in this game, and I'm cranking my brain.
That's okay. We like dead air on the radio.
Okay.
I'll sing us a little song while we're waiting.
I was driving up the mountains back from Sydney up at the Blue Mountains, and my partner Julie was driving, and she misread the signs on the speeding, and night cop pulls us over. And the cop rolled up, she rolled in the window, and she said something like, I didn't realize the rules changed. It was something totally absurd.
Yeah.
But it caught the cop by such surprise that he let her off.
So it was a kind of a non sequitur that she offered.
Yeah.
A little bit of a sequitur. No, totally non, but a little bit. A little bit off. Okay, I'm still stretching to get what risk association is. So say more about this, because I'm not getting it yet.
I'm not getting it either. I'm in a little trouble with the book, actually.
Okay.
I'll give another one. This is a really big jump, though. If you ask a mathematician, what does the number 2 stand for? You'll say it stands for all the possible pairs in the universe. So salt and pepper shakers, couples, number.
Oh, okay. So you're staying true to the original definition, but you're finding an unusual way of expressing how that relates to the universe.
So from book, we can go to bookends, and that's a pair.
We've combined both. So I'm not okay.
Let me throw one to you, okay?
Okay, good. We'll see where I hit it. If I can hit it out of the park or just a pop up to the foul territory.
Like a rich association to basketball, something that's somewhat like it in some way,
I would say going through the hoops.
That's one. Can you come up with another?
Let's see.
How about something from the world of astronomy?
Something from the world of astronomy. A sphere in orbit from your hand to the basket.
How about the moon?
How about the moon?
So the moon work as a
can
you
I work
a basketball?
Can I make a basket with the moon?
No, it doesn't have to be connected. It's a jump. It's a disconnecting jump.
Oh, from the basketball to the moon.
Yeah, or here's another one, just to show off a little bit. I can go from basketball to kangaroo. Because they were boing, boing, boing.
Oh, well, of course, my mind thinks of guru in a can. Yeah, Swami was going to manufacture a guru in a can. So in the very few minutes we have left, how does this risk association, how does it shift perspective and how does it relate to communicating about this this great transition that we're looking to create?
It works like this. People are used to thinking in familiar ways, but innovators cross-connect ideas from all sorts of places. So by playing the improv games, you learn a whole bunch of things, but you learn it not cognitively, but in your motor system. You learn that you learn how to make the metal jumps. You also learn how to, what the improv actor people say, you learn how to go with what your partner offers. So you surrender control in everything. You get okay with that and enjoy the spontaneous flow that emerges when two people think or play together. So already you're out of domination control. You're into partnership respect, even though we don't use the language there.
I keep coming back to we must become the kind of people who can create and sustain a life-affirming culture. So in a certain regard, what you're doing through these processes, in addition, of course, to training citizen communicators and teachers, what you're doing is you're actually helping people cultivate the internal tools to have a meta view, to be able to play a game, to partner rather than to beat or dominate, and also you're stretching people's mental capabilities to make free associations, and we can have a long conversation about how humor does that as well. But what you're doing is you're teaching people to create to make associations with things that aren't necessarily related, and you're having them relate in a new way. So we got about a
That's
minute
beautiful.
And a half
now.
Left. Yeah, go ahead, take it out.
Yep. So that's really beautiful, a beautiful, eloquent, elegant summary. And you say you're doing that. But the thing is, we can all be evolutionary activists. And you talk about the evolutionary uprising, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we our task, for those of us who care, is if we adopt it, is to commit ourselves to helping people around us increase their level of thinking and also give them tools to help them sort out their emotional imbalances so that we actually do become happier, more confident people. And this is a great contribution to the goal of transitioning to a life-affirming culture.
Well, that sounds really great. And of course, people, you go to the Wiki Politiki page for this interview. You'll see how you can hook up with Andrew on the internet and check out the Great Transition Initiative. And we'll be in since I'm working with Andrew and in formulating all of this, you'll be hearing more about this as time goes on. And may we have that big splash come next summer. And I have a feeling that you're onto something, particularly in educating the individual to educate the collective. Anything else before we sign off, Andrew?
Just, Steve, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Very good. A pleasure to be with you, too. This is Steve Behrman. We're on Wiki Politiki. I've been talking with Andrew Gaines, and we'll catch you next week.